problem in the long term. Then they tried Maltac and dofetilide, none of which really worked. And then in 2012, I think in June it was, you had the ablation. Let me write some of this down. And since then, you've been on this pill in the pocket with flecainide, although the nurse today reported you take it twice a day. Do you actually take it on a regular?
Oh, no, I don't
still take
it twice
as
a day.
Needed.
I take it as needed, but okay. The frequency of my needing it is like once a week now.
Really?
And I have to take all three pills and get all packed and either halfway there or or start to go before it converts. Yeah.
So when did it start getting more frequent like this?
Last 6 months or something.
And how do you know you're in atrial fibrillation? What does it feel like?
Oh, I can definitely feel it. It feels like my heart's in my throat. You feel a general weakness. You can feel the palpitations. And which brings me to another issue. For the last 3 months, I hear what sounds like a cardiac ultrasound.
The
swoosh,
swooshing
whoosh,
noise?
Whoosh, whoosh, with every beat. I can
on your
hear it,
right side?
On my right side primarily, and it's annoying as heck. I don't know what causes that at all. My Dr. Healy said take Sudafed or something might help. It didn't do anything.
No. Have you had a ultrasound of your carotids and all that? Or
no, he just took the stethoscope and says, oh, they're fine.
Yeah, I'll be doing that too.
Yeah.
There's one part of your history that I don't have all the details on and I was interested in. It says you had a TIA or a mini stroke. What was that about?
Okay, I went into one of these and went to Hepburn Hospital, and they were able to get the rate, let me think, they were able to get the tachycardia down, but I was in atrial fib and they released me from the hospital. Say, follow up with your doctor tomorrow.
How long ago was that? What year are we talking about?
I have...
Before
as
or
part
after
of that,
the ablation?
Oh, far before.
Far before.
Yeah.
So before 2012. Okay.
Yeah. And he said, get right into my office immediately. When
That's
I called
Dr.
him in
Healy.
The morning, he says, they shouldn't have let you go. And so I says, okay, do you want a cardioversion, of which I've had maybe four or five total so far? Or you want a full workup at Burlington? I says, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's go to Burlington. So I went there. While I was there, I had something because I had a migraine headache. I've never had a migraine headache before in my life. I was very sensitive to sound and light. And they didn't. I think they gave me electrocardioversion there, and then released me. But I was still having the headaches and such, and I got home, and the wife sent me, she was pregnant at the time, she sent me to the store for something. I went to the store and I had my daughter with me and she says, what's wrong? And I says, what do you mean? She says, you're laying on the cart. I was put a cart and pushing it along with my feet. And I says, I don't know. Something's very wrong. And I obviously wasn't thinking right or I wouldn't have gotten in a car. But I got in the car and put her in her car seat, and she wasn't in a car seat at that time, but and started driving home. Well, I sideswiped a car. I ended up going into the opposing lane and sideswiped a car in the middle of town, on the way home, and I'm hanging out the window. The guy's coming, the driver of the other car is coming to me, start swearing at me, and he says, "Call the ambulance, call the ambulance." And I told him, I said, "I'm having a stroke." So he called, and I went in, and so on. But
And that was here.
that was,
You went when they called an ambulance, they brought you to the hospital here,
let me think. I honestly don't remember which hospital at that time.
And did your symptoms resolve? I mean, 'cause you
Yes and no. I've had long-term short I've for a
Long
long time
term.
I've had short-term memory
I see. I
problems.
see.
One, it affected three things. It affected my left side, left-sided weakness. It gave difficulties where my entire peripheral vision was, I don't know how you describe it, flickering in colors. And the short-term memory loss.
You're 56, is that
56.
right? And you don't have high blood pressure.
No.
You don't have diabetes.
No.
You don't have congestive heart failure. You don't have peripheral vascular disease. You don't have blocked arteries or anything like that. And now the episodes happen, you say, about three times a week. They last for what, up to an hour, and then they stop, or?
Oh no. Like I say, I take a pill every 3 or every hour, up to 3 pills. So 3 hours.
Okay. And then it
Generally.
always stops on its own. When's the last time you needed a cardioversion? Before the ablation?
I've been suffering from these since I was about 30.
The AFib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
Let me just
a
take
little
a look at
earlier
your
than that,
medications.
actually.
Well, I think there's two things we need to discuss related to your atrial fibrillation. The main risk with atrial fibrillation is that it increases your risk of having a stroke. And how we calculate people's risk of having a stroke from atrial fibrillation is dependent on what we call the scale called the CHA₂DS₂-VASc scale, where we give people various points for various things that they've had
Dr.
before.
Healy mentioned that.
And in your case, you don't have any points on that scale except for the fact that you already had what we I'm gonna, I don't have an MRI to absolutely put it in stone and confirm it, but I think it's fairly clear that you did have what we call a TIA or a mini stroke in the
Right.
past. And that would give you right off the bat 2 points on that scale, which means that with continued episodes of atrial fibrillation like you're having now, your yearly risk of a stroke again would be about 2% a year. And that's not an incredibly high number if you take 1 year in isolation, but you're pretty young, and if we add all the years of life you have left, that adds up to a pretty high number. The guidelines are pretty clear. With 0 points, we know you're better off not taking a blood thinner. With 1 point, we could kind of go either way. And with 2 or more points, people usually do better with a blood thinner to prevent strokes in the future. And I'm not talking about an aspirin. I think you do take an aspirin. I'm talking about a strong blood thinner. I'm sure you were on Coumadin around the time of the ablation. And a lot of people give me the same look that you're giving me. And some patients will say, "Doc, I understand my risk of stroke is 2%. I'd still rather not take a blood thinner, but at the very least, we need to have a discussion, because if we went solely by guidelines, you should be on a blood thinner in the long term." And I think how we deal with the atrial fibrillation will play into that, because it sounds like you've failed multiple antiarrhythmic medications. You've already had an ablation. I'm sure Dr. Lobel had told you that, the fine print with the ablation is a lot of people need to have it done more than once.
You said one time was a 45%
Yeah.
success rate, twice was a 60%
It's
success rate or
actually gotten a
something.
little bit better than that. Usually we'll quote people, first time is about 50-50, 45, I mean, close enough. But with the second ablation, and with adding drugs that didn't work before and the second ablation, I think overall we could get to 75 or maybe even
What he said
80%.
also was that doing that, you got to start over again because your system will react to the medications differently than
Yes,
they used
it
to.
will.
Some will work that didn't before, some
Correct.
won't.
And so I think We have a few options here, but I think, you know, I think those are two somewhat independent decisions. I think I'm going to recommend a blood thinner anyway, because that has to do with your risk of stroke, and that, for reasons we don't really understand, doesn't have to do as much with how much of this atrial fibrillation you're having. It just has to do with you have the problem, you're still having the atrial fibrillation, and your risk on that scale is 2 for having had a stroke before. So that's one part of the discussion. And then, you know, how we deal with this depends purely on how it makes you feel. Because some people have atrial fibrillation, they don't feel it at all, they don't know it's happening. And in those people, we don't really need to pursue what we call a rhythm control strategy. We don't need to try to get them back to normal rhythm at all costs. Whereas the people like yourself who feel bad when they have the AFib, then we like to get them back into normal rhythm.
But well, I don't. I'm rather non-symptomatic.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you told me you feel lousy, your heart's up in your throat, and you feel weak.
Well, I'm very aware of it.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't stop me from doing anything.
What I'm getting at is, you know, there's no data to show us that getting you back into normal rhythm will make you live any longer, and it's not going to reduce your risk of having a stroke. If you had to be on a blood thinner before, you should probably still be on a blood thinner after, either a successful ablation or the antiarrhythmic medications. And so purely the reason to try to work hard at getting people back into normal rhythm is to make them feel better. And a lot of people feel really bad when they have the AFib, and that's enough to have ablations and all these other things done. But the people who don't feel the atrial fibrillation at all, we just put them on a blood thinner and let them be in atrial fibrillation if they're completely asymptomatic. Going forward, you know, I think, and a lot of people ask me, well, Doc, what would you do? And it's a hard question for me because I don't know how bad this makes you feel.
Right.
I don't have
right.
atrial fibrillation. But I think we have a few options. I think we could try antiarrhythmic medications, not the Flecainide that you take now, because clearly I think it's past its time. It's not working much anymore. But either something that you take on a regular basis, like the Fetalide or something like that. The problem is you tried it before, it didn't work. Now that you've had the ablation, I think the chance of it working is slightly higher, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't
work.
Let's not
put all our eggs in that basket.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Or we could do another ablation, which I think is very reasonable. Like Dr. LaBelle told you, the chance of a second ablation being successful is kind of cumulative with the first, much, much higher, you know, close to 60 or 70% chance of not having any AFib after 5 years. And that's not an unreasonable thing. The thing to understand is we're just trying to make you feel better. And you just told me, at least at first, my impression was that this AFib was really bothersome and made you feel crummy. Whereas now you're telling me it doesn't really make you feel any reason to get all those things is to make you feel better. And so we'll have to weigh kind of the upfront risk of the procedure versus the how bad the AFib makes you feel and kind of decide what do you think we should do.
Mm-hmm.
You've had the ablation before, so you're in a fairly good position to kind of judge what the procedure is. You know, it's general anesthesia. You come into the hospital. We keep you overnight. We let you go home the same day. I'd probably send you back to Dr. LaBelle because he knows you. He did your first ablation. Unfortunately, I don't do the AFib ablations anymore because I spend most of my time here. And so I don't spend enough time doing them in Vermont. I think you need to do a certain number a year to really keep your hand at doing them.
My biggest problem with that one was I had bleeding from the point where they did it,
uh-huh.
and that wasn't stopping after I went home, but it took a lot to get that to stop.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because you're on a blood thinner at the same time and
yeah.
poking holes, and so the risk of bleeding is definitely there. The good thing is that's not a... You know, it's very unlikely to be a life-threatening or a severe bleed. It's more of a nuisance, but certainly uncomfortable and not a fun complication to have. You know, there is really no downside in waiting to make this decision. The only way that wouldn't be true is if you're in AFib all the time, because the more atrial fibrillation you have, the harder it is to get rid of it if it's lasting all the time. But you're someone who goes in and out. You don't usually have it for more than 3 hours. You're certainly in normal sinus rhythm now. And I think if you want to kind of wait and see how things go to make that decision, that's not unreasonable. I think our options are antiarrhythmic medication. Probably dofetilide would be my choice, which would mean 3 days in the hospital, something we can do here. I think you'd been on it before. It didn't work
back
then.
Oh, that's the one that you...
Tikasin, your dofetilide,
yeah,
twice a
okay.
day. We check the EKG.
That's the one they need to monitor and
yes.
get regulated in the
Correct.
ICU.
They'll usually in the ICU send you to the regular floor. In Vermont, you just go to the regular floor. All you need is telemetry to make sure you're on the heart monitor. But that would be one option. The other option would be to do another ablation, which I think is very reasonable, having had one before. Or the third option is, well, the AFib doesn't really bother me that much, and let's just let it be. And the only downside of that decision is if we let it be, and then it starts happening more often and lasting longer, and eventually you go into AFib all the time, then we wish, you know, if we want to control the rhythm, we need to do that before you get into AFib all the time, because that would really be doing you a disservice.
It's obviously happening more often. Yeah.
Right. And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. You know, from a medical standpoint, we're trying to make you feel better, so we have to weigh how bad does this make you feel versus, you know, how painful all these procedures are. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, I think you should be on a blood thinner, at least in the intermediate term, pretty much no matter what we decide to do with the rhythm itself.
Is there a choice other than something that I have to be... have blood work every week?
Yeah, so there used to be only Coumadin. I guess you're familiar with that medication. It's been around forever. It's well studied. We know it works. The problem is we have to monitor your level. Your Coumadin level keeps going up and down. We give you more pills. We give you less pills depending on what you eat. And you need all the blood tests to make sure that we're doing it right. The good news is there's two new medications out there. Xarelto, which you might have seen both ads and lawsuits on.
Yes, I know.
Apixaban, which is a little bit newer medication. They're both very good medications. The downsides of them are they're new, so they're expensive. So sometimes I send them and people call me from the pharmacy saying it's going to cost me a ridiculous amount of money. And unfortunately, it's very hard for me to know before they actually try to run the insurance and all that, the copays. It gets quite complicated. But apart from cost, the downside of the new medications are, you know, let's say, God forbid, you're in a car accident or something terrible and you have a life-threatening bleed. If you're on Coumadin, every doctor knows how to turn around Coumadin. It's been around for long enough. The antidote is well-known. Everybody knows how to deal with that. Whereas the newer medications also have a way to reverse them, but it's a little bit more complicated and a little bit more cumbersome. And so from a medical standpoint, that would be the only disadvantage of the new medications. When they compared them to Coumadin, one of them, the Xarelto that you might have seen, the lawsuits on TV, was at least as good, meaning it's probably better, but it's certainly no worse than Coumadin. And the other, the newer medication called Apixaban, was actually a little bit better, meaning less people had strokes, less people had bleeding. The numbers are very small. I mean, you'd have to treat a high number of people to benefit one, but it's a good med. It's a better medication. Usually when I have people who've never taken Coumadin, I start one of the new medications just because it's easier to take, and then we see how they do. Whereas people who are already on Coumadin or who've been on Coumadin before and know the drill, we could do either Coumadin or one of the new medications. There's really no wrong answer here. I think in your case, I'd probably try Xarelto and see, you know, I don't know, again, insurance copays and all that, but if it's fairly affordable, then you can just take one pill a day and that's it.
I have Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah. Again, it's so complicated. Most people, it's not a problem, and sometimes I get an angry phone call from the pharmacy, and we have to change to Coumadin. So why don't I try to send that? Which pharmacy should I send it to?
Kinney Drugs in Canton.
Okay. And what about the other decision about the rhythm?
My significant other would tell you that I do complain about feeling tired and
Well, that's, you know, the impression I got from when we started talking about it was that certainly the AFib bothered you to some degree. You know, I think having had an ablation before, you know what it entails. So I think we're in a good position to make. You've never had trouble with your kidneys?
No. to suggest a blood thinner and a different medication?
I'm definitely suggesting the blood thinner. That's the one thing that's clear. You know, just following guidelines, there's really no doubt that you should be on a blood thinner that over the long term you'll benefit, meaning we're reducing your stroke much more than we're increasing your risk of bleeding, because that's the balancing act when it comes to blood thinners. And your risk of stroke being 2% a year, you're very young, so you, let's multiply that by, let's say, 40 years. I mean, that becomes a very, very high number. And so that's to reduce your risk of stroke from the AFib. How we deal with the AFib, the rhythm itself, like I said, there's three options. Either do nothing, wait and see, or try medications which didn't work before but now have some chance of working because of the previous ablation, or just go straight for another ablation. And there's no wrong answer between those three things. If you want to take time to think about it and you know, talk to your wife, that's also reasonable.
Well, let's do the medication and see if that can help.
Okay.
And then consider the ablation
if it doesn't. Okay. I'm thinking here. You get AFib 3 times a week, so we need to have you on a blood thinner.
Well, not 3 times a week, once a week.
Once a week for up to 3 pills. That's right. But you're already in and out on your own. Yeah, we could have you come into the hospital. Usually I have people come in on a Tuesday, and then we start first dose Tuesday, doses 2 and 3, 1 and 5, dose Friday morning, and then you go home on Friday, and we can do that next week if you're, I don't know what your schedule
okay.
looks like.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. All right, well, let me go, let's go talk to Sharon, our scheduler, and we'll get that arranged. Pleasure to meet you.
Likewise.
All right.